I'm Ashley, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ashley.
Wasn't nervous until I was asked if we could record this and to wear a mic. I've never done this before. So, my sobriety date is June 26, 2016. I have 6.5 years sober, which is an absolute miracle. Before I get into this, I was taught early on to focus when I'm telling my story on the solution. So I do start off anytime I tell my story, and I read the same paragraph every time on page 75, the fifth step promises. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. There are a lot of promises in this book. We hear the ninth step promises read at most meetings, some tenth step promises in meetings. These promises were the most impactful in my sobriety and the most meaningful to me. There was a lot of times in my life that I could not be alone. I definitely couldn't look the world in the eyes or another single human being because of who I was and the shame and the guilt that I felt. So these have been what meant so much to me. So I'll start with the beginning-ish. I'm from here. I've never lived anywhere but Georgia, within, 25 miles of the house that I was born and raised in, here in Woodstock, which is about 2 blocks from Howe Place. As Tanya mentioned, we were raised in this room. I was brought up with a bunch of alcoholics because my father was in sobriety. He got sober when I was 5, I think. So his cup is in one of those cabinets there, and I can hope that when my time is done on this earth, that my cup goes in there too. That is what I hope. Raised in a very loving home. We had a stay-at-home mother who devoted her entire life to her family. She got up every morning. We didn't eat cereal or Pop-Tarts every morning. We had a fully cooked, home-cooked breakfast every morning before school. We came home to our beds made, our rooms nicely dusted and clean, had a snack waiting for us, and then had a home-cooked dinner every night at the table with our family. My dad found his peace and serenity in this room. My mom found her peace and serenity in church. So we were a little divided. You know, my mom was extremely religious, and my dad allowed her to raise my sister and I in the religion. We were raised Jehovah's Witnesses. I don't know if y'all know anything about that. It was a really weird upbringing. When you're in public school and every holiday, every birthday party, you have to be excused from class and go to another room. That's awkward, you know, and everybody knows why. You know, you're the weird one. You're the odd man out. So I felt that very early on in that not belonging. I didn't belong in public school, didn't belong with those people. But I also knew that I didn't really belong with the people in the religion as well. You know, there was something that I didn't feel was right about the religion. So being kind of not coaxed, almost forced into being in that religion for so long, it did have an impact on me. I knew that that wasn't what I believed at a very early age, but I was not allowed to express that at all. So it was just a really weird place when you don't fit in anywhere. So middle, high school, whatever, you know, I started finding the people that I fit in with, which were the other people that didn't fit in, you know. I am an alcoholic 100%. I have what I call a side of outside issues, which I will not get into heavily because I respect Alcoholics Anonymous traditions, and I will keep it AA-based. But I started dabbling in, you know, light things when I was in middle school, high school. Very quickly, I think I was in 10th grade when I started drinking at school. I will say this. I remember what my first drink was. I don't remember what it did to me. I do remember forcing myself and gagging to drink it. One of my dad's contractors had left a Red Dog, not a Mad Dog, a Red Dog, unopened beer in the yard. The can was so weathered that it was almost white. And I drank it in my playhouse. And it was nasty and disgusting and hot and flat. And to me, tasted like vomit, honestly. But I drank it. Who does that? You know, that's not a sign at all. So, like I said, so fast forward in high school, I start hanging out with the kids that are, you know, drinking. We're stopping at Smoothie King on the way to, I went to Woodstock High School. We're stopping at the way, on the way to school, and we're getting a smoothie. We're pouring half of it out, and we are pouring vodka and peach schnapps in the rest, and we are going to school. That didn't last very long. I started leaving school at lunch. You know, I was just going to go to lunch. Very quickly stopped going back to school. Like, I don't know why I went in the mornings even, you know. But I did. I was 17 years old. My parents, after, I want to say 35 years, 38 years, were divorced. There was no decision for me to make. I went with my father because he allowed me to do what I want. So obviously I was going to go with him, left the religion, left the house. And that's when I really, looking back, can start seeing, you know, harms caused by me and the pain that I put other people through. But I went and did what I wanted to do, you know. He would buy me cartons of cigarettes. He busted me one night doing something I shouldn't have been doing. And I was just kind of like told, be careful. Don't do that again. You know, I knew there was no consequences. He loved me very much. I knew his story. Like I said, I was raised here in this room, so I knew the causes and effects of alcoholism, but I had never actually seen it. You know, I mean, like I said, I was a toddler, you know, so I'd never actually seen the effects of alcoholism other than another family member. My story kind of crosses into other people's stories. I try to avoid that as well. But another family member was an alcoholic as well, so I did see the effects that it had on him and my family. But other than that, it was just stories. You know, I came in here, I heard your stories, but that's all it was. Y'all were all normal. You all were working. You all had families. You know, you're all normal. It was just story time in here to me. You know, it never really meant anything. So 17, moved out with my dad. That was June 21st. That date is significant. June 21st, the year 2000. No. What, 99. I moved out with my dad. A year to the day later, my daughter was born. And that is why that is significant. Moved into apartments over here off of Bells Ferry Road. Which, funny enough, I now own a house behind those same apartments. Moved over there. Met the first love of my life. There were a few of those, too. We won't get into that too much. But met the first love of my life and had my daughter, like I said, June 21st, 2001. So it was 2000. I was barely 18 years old. I was still a child. I did get sober during my pregnancy, other than a little bit of, again, outside issues, which weren't too bad at the time. During that time, my father got ill with cancer. He passed away in October after my daughter turned a year. It wasn't long after that that I got involved in outside issues, additional with my alcoholism. But when my father passed away, that is the first life experience that I had with that kind of grief. and I could not cope. I couldn't cope, you know. My dad was my favorite person in the entire world, and I was completely, completely lost without him. It didn't take very long until my husband and I had separated off and on. I had been living with my mother off and on. She was basically raising my daughter because I just could not, I couldn't do it. I was in and out of another fellowship for a couple years. I actually celebrated 18 months in that program while I was pregnant with my son, my second child, and stayed sober, did really well. I took really good care of myself in that pregnancy. I worked full time. I was, you know, I mean, I had planned to have another child. It wasn't unexpected like it was at 17. Very happy. Everything in my life was going really great. And he was born in August, and I believe about 6 months later, his father and I were divorced because my addiction and some cross addiction just were too much for each other. It did not take long after that before I spiraled again, was back living at home with my mother, who was now raising both of my children and putting up with my crap on a daily basis. That woman, her family has put her through so much hell, and I have never met a more loving person in my life. My mother is one of my best friends today. I talk to her almost daily. I see her typically at least once a week. We are so close, and I'm so grateful that I realized that the damage that I was causing in that relationship. So, and I mean, I'm fast forwarding through a lot because I'm almost 40 today. So, there's a lot of life in between 22 and now. So, you know, my life was up and down for many years. I would drink alcoholically at some points. At some points, I was a very functioning alcoholic. And I say very functioning, you know. I was able to just go home at night, and right after work on the way home, I would go to the liquor store, get two shots of Fireball and two 24-ounce beers. And that's what I drank every day for several years. And I functioned through that. I paid my bills, took care of my kids. At that time, now I had moved out of my mother's, was doing really well. Oh, hell, I'd already been married again and divorced by then. So that was, we'll just skip over that. that was not a sober decision. I was, in fact, so drunk on my wedding day that we got married. I made him take me to, I don't remember what restaurant, you know, Applebee's or something, you know, like I'm wasted. I'm like, take me to Applebee's and get a hamburger. Went home and passed out. So that was, yeah, that marriage didn't last very long, thankfully. So, so now I'm living in this cute little house in Ackworth. Like I said, I've got both my kids full time. We're doing great. You know, life is wonderful. They're coming home from school every day. Mommy goes and has mommy time outside for 2 hours and then goes inside, cooks dinner, does homework, goes outside and finishes mommy time after we tuck them in. You know, that was my normal, you know, to the point that I would pick my son up from school and he would say, can we not go to the liquor store today? You know, so even when I was a functioning alcoholic, I was very much an alcoholic. My children knew what I was doing, even though I thought, you know, I'm hiding it so well. Let's see. So, living in this house in Ackworth, everything's going great. I am going to talk about this part just because this was significant. Another love of my life came into my life and introduced me to a lifestyle that I had seen on television that I had always wanted. And I lived that lifestyle with him for, close to a year off and on, which took me to some very, to me, very scary places. This was the second extremely abusive relationship that I had been in. And if you're a woman that has ever been in an abusive relationship, especially when you're in addiction or alcoholism, you know that it is almost impossible to leave. My self-worth was nothing at this point, and I had no choice. I stayed with this person who honestly I thought was probably going to kill me, you know. That's the truth. I knew it then. I know it now. And still to this day, if I think I see that person out in public, which I think I see quite often, more than I would like to admit, my heart drops and that fear boils inside of me. I've done a lot of work on that, but continue to do work on that. So I lived this lifestyle, like I said, for close to a year. And during that, that lifestyle took me away from my children, on the weekends, every night, because that's what I was expected to do. So I did it. I would come home from those nights out at whatever time, 2-3 o'clock in the morning, wasted to the point that he was having to carry me into the house and put me to the bed. My daughter at the time was 14. And was having to take care of her 10-year-old son, her 10-year-old brother, my son, almost full time because I ceased being a functioning alcoholic at that point. I could not function any longer. So this took me back to court with their father for good reason. We spent a lot of time in and out of court through different things in our lives. And he was finally able to gain custody. You know, I could not, I mean, I couldn't even afford a even halfway decent attorney. You know, I mean, hell, you can't fight that shit anyways, you know. When your 14-year-old daughter is telling her father the situation at her home and she's telling legal officials the situation at home, you can't fight that, you know. You can't, because it's the truth. You know, and even going through that, I still couldn't get sober. You know, I tried briefly. I came in here. I got a sponsor. Never worked a step in my life. I got to about 90 days at that point and went back out. Because again, the lifestyle that I was living, I was in, bars around a lot of alcohol and other substances on a regular basis. And for somebody with no sobriety and no recovery, that's impossible to stay sober. You cannot go to a bar every night and drink Diet Coke and water and not drink eventually. You just cannot. So I drank again at that point. Once my children had been removed from my custody, I was given certain visitation rights, which I stayed with that. I don't know how. I had to pass a urine alcohol exam every Monday after my children had spent the weekend with me. And I do not know how. I didn't drink. I don't. Because again, I had no sobriety. There was no recovery. I had it timed from Monday after my test. This is Monday morning at 8 a.m. I go test. I had it timed from the time I peed in that cup to the time Thursday morning at 3 a.m. I could have my last drink and pass that test. And I did. My alcoholism at that point was completely out of control. I worked at a little vacation spot. Like, we sold timeshares and vacations for timeshares on Town Lake Parkway. And I passed a liquor store every day that opened at 8 a.m. It is the only liquor store in this area. And I don't know what time they open now because I haven't been in a while. But it is the only liquor store in this area that at that point opened at 8 a.m. And I was there like clockwork, Monday at 8:30, rest of the week, 8 o'clock, buying my little airplane bottles because you can't smell vodka. I don't know who told us that and when, y'all, but I know I'm not the only one that thought that. Good God. So Went to the liquor store, went to work. I considered myself functioning at that point. I was not functioning. And what little bit I was functioning, I wasn't functioning well. At this point, I mean, my house was upside down, you know. I had moved into another house, which was totally trashed. When we moved in, we had to do a lot of cleaning. And then when we moved out, it was, well, no, when I moved out, I was sober. But so I just lost my train of thought a little. So, okay, so I'm going to work, still paying my bills-ish. When I say ish, I really wasn't paying a lot of rent. I was renting from family, so I really was just paying them whatever I could at the time. And then we would play what I like to call utility roulette. And we would come home from work. We would go flip a light switch on. We'd go turn the water on the hot side because we needed to know what utility we did not have. And as soon as we realized what it was, we would go to that utility and we would write them a bad check. They would turn it back on for a couple weeks. Hell, the guy would be out there cutting the meter for the water and we're like, hey, dude, can we just give you a check right here? Can we give you some cash? You know what I'm saying? Like, somehow, like, we would not have a utility, then it'd be on. Then it'd be on for 2 weeks, then it'd be off, you know? And I lived like that for about a year. I was so intoxicated at work. I would be passing out at my desk. I would stand up to go to the restroom and just fall over. I would be on the phone with customers all day, slurring my words. And finally, they had enough of that too. So, you know, I was asked one day to leave work, and not to come back until I was sober. I do want to mention this because it makes me laugh. So that same liquor store that I would go to at 8 o'clock in the morning and buy my little shots, 4 or 5, you know, no big deal, right? I would go back at lunch or before lunch when I ran out and I'd buy more to the point they told me one day, if you come back in here today, we're calling the cops. They were going to get me on a DUI. I said, you're not sober. You know, I was going up there way too often. So it's pretty bad. You know, it's kind of like getting kicked out of a bar for being drunk. You know, like who gets told you can't come back to the liquor store today? So I do. So that lasted about a year. There was a lot that went on in that year that, you know, I really, really started screwing up with the stuff with my kids. You know, I was physically sober on the weekends, you know, but the obsession to drink and that, like, gotta get to Monday to 8:30. I didn't spend any quality time with them, you know, there's no way. Like, when the obsession is that strong, because we can take the alcohol out for times, I could, you know, day, 2 days, few hours, but the obsession when I wasn't drinking or didn't have alcohol at home was unreal. This is where I get a little bit emotional. So I was suspended from my job. So of course now I just had all the time in the world to drink, and I did. I had struggled as a teenager with some self-harm issues, but I had never been suicidal. I had never wanted to die. Just when I was in emotional pain, I would do things to my body to relieve that emotional pain and turn it into physical pain because I could handle that. I had picked that habit back up before I got sober. And on June 25th, so that's the day before my sobriety date of 2016, I had decided that the world was better off without me. And definitely that my children would be better off without me. And I had a plan that would have not been a shock to anyone, because I'm just a drunk in my car driving. So if I die doing that, then I was just drunk and being stupid, and nobody would ever know that that was intentional. And if you're a dog person, you'll understand the next part. I had three dogs and a cat, because, you know, that's another thing we do as alcoholics. We pick up animals. I now have three dogs and two cats, for the record. So one of my dogs came out, and something about that dog. I knew that he needed me. And that sounds so silly to me sometimes, because I couldn't, I knew my kids were better off without me, because they had loving homes to go to. They had safe places to go. But I could not fathom my animals being split up and something bad happening to my dogs. I called my sister and this loser that I was dating and asked them to take me to the hospital. As soon as I was done, of course, with the alcohol that I had, I asked them to take me to the hospital. I think this was a Saturday. It was a Saturday. And I asked them to take me to the hospital. We went to the hospital. And thank you. Went to the hospital. Checked in. I was ready to go to detox. I had only been to detox once ever in my life. I was maybe 18 or so. But, you know, I was ready to go to detox. I was ready to get sober. I knew I had to get sober. They hooked me up to all the IVs, you know, took my blood. They came in, and I do not remember my BAC, and I'm not going to try to. I walked into the hospital, maybe stumbled a little, but I walked, and I was coherent and talking, and this woman looked me dead in the face and said, "You shouldn't be able to stand up." The amount of alcohol in my system would have had a grown man down on the floor, and I was somewhat functioning. So I stayed hooked up to their IVs and whatnot, fought with these nurses the whole time. And I was actually telling this to somebody the other day, and this is an amends that will be added because it's something that just came up recently that I thought about, is that if nothing else, to write Kennestone Hospital a letter and just to say thank you for what you do for people, because the way that I treated those nurses and doctors, I would have punched myself in the face, you know, cussing out every nurse that came in there that wouldn't let me go smoke a cigarette. You know, I'm going to smoke right here, you know, cussing them out, just being nasty, you know, because that's who I am. That's who I am with alcohol in my system. I am nasty. I am mean. I am ugly. I am just absolutely horrible. So I stayed hooked up long enough to feel better. I don't know, a few hours, maybe I was there 8 hours. And I felt good enough to go home. Changed my mind. Said, I'm done with this. I am not going to detox. Get this thing out of my arm and let me go home. And another nurse came in there and said, if you leave here, you're going to die. She said, you will die from the withdrawals of alcohol. Dead ass. My kids were coming home Monday, I guess, for the week for summer. And I said, I have to go home. I can't be in detox when my kids come home. Like, because in my head, I was still hiding this so well from my children. So I went home, and I will tell you right now, when I meet newcomers, when I start working with new people or know that somebody is detoxing, I take them straight to the hospital and I advise them, do not do what I did. I could have 100% died from withdrawals of alcohol. I do not advise anyone to do that on a medical side, because that is extremely dangerous. I did not die, obviously. I wanted to. I have withdrawn off several things in my past. This was the worst thing I had ever gone through in my life. I was having to change and wash my sheets. I am not shitting you twice a day because of the amount of sweat coming off of my body. It's bad when you can smell yourself, you know, because you know if you're around other people, you know, when we come in here, we don't smell nice, you know, we don't. We learn how to shower, take care of ourselves at some point. But I was very stinky when I got here. And I was extremely sick for about 10 days. I did come to a meeting that Sunday. I did not pick up a white chip. I was not ready to do that. I came to a meeting that Sunday, sat in the very back with my sister and one of my friends at the time, and just sweat my ass off the whole time. Didn't hear anything that was said, but I was here. So I met a few people through that guy that I had been dating, because he was 8 years sober when we started dating. So that's why I say a loser, because that was not a healthy relationship. So he introduces me to some folks. Thursday of that week, I finally picked up the phone and I called somebody, and I don't even know who asked who first, but one of us said, "Will you sponsor me, or do you want me to sponsor you?" I don't remember which, but the first thing she said to me is, "Are you willing to do anything?" I said, "Yes, absolutely. What do you want me to do?" She said, "Go to 90 meetings in 90 days. I said, "I'm not doing that." "Nope." I said, "I'm not doing that." She said, "Then I'm not sponsoring you." And I was like, "Fine, I'll do that." You know, and I did 90 meetings in 90 days. I probably did 120 meetings in 90 days. I got right into the book. This woman, and I'm going to say this too, because I work with a lot of women now, and what we do is service work here. You know, I remember how it felt on the other end, and that's why I put a lot of my efforts and a love of this program into other women. I had nothing. You know, I came in here. I had a pair of dollar flip-flops from Old Navy, that were half chewed up by one of my dogs. Pants that did not fit me, and black tank tops. That is all I wore. I had no money. I had no nothing, you know, and this woman called me one night after a meeting and said, "Hey, what are you doing?" I said, "I'm sitting on the front porch smoking a cigarette." She said, "I'm on the way over." And she brought me a pack of cigarettes and Diet Coke from QT. And, that's the kind of shit that we don't realize when we do it, how much it means to a newcomer. Because when you have nothing, a Diet Coke and a pack of cigarettes is everything, you know. And she sat on the front stoop with me for 2 hours. When I met her, she was dressed beautifully. Her hair was done. Her makeup was done. And I thought, there's no way this woman has been where I am. And on that stoop that night, she let me know she had, you know. It's important that we talk about who we were so that we can relate, so that a newcomer does not feel alone. Because when another woman sat with me and did that, I didn't feel alone for the first time in a really, really long time. I got into this book with everything I had, I worked the shit out of these steps. A lot of that was very painful and sometimes still is. And I have not looked back since. At 11 months sober, I started sponsoring women. I finished my steps and I started sponsoring women. That has been one of the most beautiful experiences in my life. I have one of my sponsees here today who usually won't get out of bed this early. So that tells you how much she loves me, which means so much to me too. You know, my program changed at that point. When I started working with other women, my program turned a new corner. I had never experienced freedom like that. Never. And that is why I continue to do what I do today. I have had periods of sobriety that were not graceful, that were not pretty. I have buried two of my closest friends in this program, which was really, really hard. I have buried friends that their cups are in there too, because they died sober. stupid fucking dog. I buried that dog that saved my life. And everything happens for a reason. I do believe that. And I believe that even the little dog had his purpose. I started making amends. My children were first on my list. They were the easiest. And even though they probably don't even remember what that looked like, I do. And when I got done with my little spiel with my son, I just said, is there anything that you need to tell me? Is there anything you need to say? You know, how are you feeling about any of this? And he said, no, you're a much, much better mommy than you were. And that's what mattered to him. I made amends to my mother. My mom has had many, many direct amends made to her between her husband and her children. So I chose not to do a verbal amends with my mother. I was actually, I say blessed because I was blessed to be able to go take care of her after a surgery that she had had. And she had said thank you or something. And I said, please don't say thank you. I'm trying to be a better daughter than I have been to you. And she said, you are. And that was my amends to my mother. I have made several amends throughout the years. Some of them have gone well. Some of them have not. Some of them have been absolutely refused, and that is okay too. I was also told early on that it was not about what the other person receiving my amends had to say or do about what I had to say. This was about me. This was about getting my side clean so that I could live with myself. So like the book says, I could look the world in the eye. I still love being at home, being alone, watching television, or sitting with myself. I love myself today. I love the person that I am. I love that now today, when my dogs eat my shoes, I can go buy new ones. That's real. So, this program has absolutely saved my life, saved many others' lives. I was blessed to be able to purchase a home 3 years ago, which is something that I would have never been able to do. I met my now husband in these rooms and have an actual healthy relationship. I did not know what that looked like. It was a little scary. We even go to counseling to be able to talk to each other right. You know, growing with him, growing with my sister, with the friends that I have in this room that are now family. It's a beautiful thing, y'all. I've had the roughest year of my life this past 6 months, or 4 months. Yep. Roughest year of my life, the last 4 months. And I say that because I made it through it sober. I did not want to drink. And when I tell y'all, I'm not going to go into it because it's not my story to tell. But when I tell y'all it was hard, it was hard. But not once did I want to drink. I did not go through that as gracefully as I maybe could have. Whatever word you want to use. But I made it through it sober. And I made it through it with people carrying me the whole way. You know, I wouldn't have that if it weren't for this program. I was not able to be a friend, a wife, a mother, a sister, anything before I got sober. And now I am all those things, and I am given those things back. You know, the relationships that I have built today are next to none, dude. I have a network, a group of friends that have become family that we don't go through anything alone. Nothing, you know. If you don't have a network, get one. If you don't have a sponsor, get one. If you would just do what I did, give it a chance, we can go back out anytime. I can go right now to the liquor store if I want to. It's always going to be there. I gave this thing a chance. It changed my freaking life. I love it very much, and I thank you guys for letting me share with you my story.